And these are just the, like, two main sources of direct sources of law that, you know, you'll be using when you are doing your immigration cases or doing any of your research. So, you know, the Immigration Nationality Act, the INA, and then the most of the regulations for immigration are under 8 CFR. And then just, like, other sources of information for, like, cases. You, of course, have case law. Like I said, the federal courts, there's a lot of case law in the federal courts, but also the Board of Immigration Appeals, and then the Administrative Appeals Office. So, like I said, like DOJ has jurisdiction over the federal courts and the Board of Immigration Appeals, like over here, and then USCIS under DHS has jurisdiction over the Administrative Appeals Office. And that's where you can, if you have like something denied in front of USCIS, that you can, you know, file an appeal there. And, you know, all of these different agencies, you know, they were created after 9/11. The Homeland Security Act kind of broke everything out. And so now it's super confusing. And all of these agencies, you know, don't always work together. They may have different agendas, you know, depending on who is running all of these agencies. And so it's gotten, like, more confusing as time goes on and as more immigration, like, applications are filed and cases are filed. And then, you know, just some other sources of information for you. So memos and policy statements. So this administration especially likes to make a lot of law through memos and policy statements that they just post on their website. So, you know, things often come out of the blue. You can find, you know, most of their memos and policy statements on their websites. And then, of course, like all the sources for EOIR rules and et cetera. And we can probably go through these quickly. So here are just the agency websites if you want to get more information. They're pretty good in, you know, posting things and keeping them updated. So I would encourage you to, you know, check them out. And then just other resources.
I just love travel.state.gov because it sounds like such a fun website, but it's really not. It's not at all fun, but it's such a good name.
And then just other resources. I think, you know, if you are learning immigration law, or even if you know a lot of immigration law and want to learn about, you know, other things, like these organizations, they put out like practice advisories when new memos and policies come out. They put out lots of great like resources, like books that you can use that will guide you through, like your steps to doing a case, or give you background or arguments to make if you're writing a brief. So, you know, I would really check out all of these organizations. On top of that, they're really great to kind of stay abreast of like policy issues and like what's happening, what's coming down the pike. Are there opportunities for you to raise your voice and make it heard and comment on these things? Like, how do you interact with the government? So they're really helpful. I mean, AILA has like chapters all around the country, as I'm sure you all know, that you can, you know, that interact with these organizations like more frequently on a local level. So that.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about just getting information about what is going on, which once I said to my daughter, God, these people are driving me crazy. I can't resolve this. And she said, well, just call them, which is like, that's not how immigration works. It's full of walls meant to keep you from ever talking to anyone who can actually help you with your problem. So you got to figure out other ways to get information or to solve problems. And for starters, if someone comes to you and they're already somehow in the immigration system, they've entered as illegally and been picked up, or they've already entered on some kind of visa, they're going to have an A number. Currently, A numbers begin with, I think we're up to 219, I've seen. But there's some really old ones that only have 7 digits, but you always put a 0 or 2 zeros in front of them for any kind of telephonic or online search. And then once something has been filed with USCIS, you will have, once you get a receipt, you will have a case number that helps you get information about that specific case. In immigration court, basically, the A number is always going to be your primary means of identifying a case. I will say as an aside that I've occasionally run into people who have more than one A number, which is itself a problem you need to resolve, because theoretically, once you have an A number, you should always have used that A number. There are a couple of phone numbers you can call, not to talk to human beings, but to get certain information that's quite helpful. So the courts, which is EOIR, have an 800 number that will tell you whether someone has a hearing scheduled in immigration court, and it will tell you where it is. And I think it's back to telling you who the judge is now. For a while, they took that away. It seems to be back. And there's a couple of other, once you work through the enter your A number, blah, 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 you can get the date of your next hearing. Number two, you can get what they call case processing information, which will tell you if you have a clock running. So if you're an asylum applicant, you might have enough days to get a work permit. And then the number three button, which is you need to use whenever you deal with anybody and they have an A number, it tells you, it will generally let you know if someone's ever been ordered deported, which is a removed. I can never quite get beyond deported. But if they've ever been removed, which is great information because often people fail to mention that, or sometimes they don't know because it was an in absentia order. But when anybody comes in, I just check out the 800 number and see what information is on there, because it's a faster way sometimes to get information.